And the guys that have transferred away recently, they've had problems with other schools, too. It's Austin Grandstaff. He had problems with Oklahoma when he left Ohio State. And then Mickey Mitchell had problems with Santa Barbara when he left Ohio State. So maybe it was not as much of a problem with Fred Meyer and his staff. But I think that relative to all the things they've had to deal with this season, Ohio State should definitely be keeping Fred Meyer going forward.
This is With an Ohio Bias, a podcast for real fans with D and Jake.
I am D, Cleveland born and raised, Buckeye born and bred.
And I'm Jake from Youngstown to C-Bus. Talking some sports. Let's go.
We're getting started early, ladies and gentlemen, with a preview of March Madness with one and only Big Five, City Six born and bred, Matthew Trebold. He's from the City of Basketball Love, so if you can't put that together with what I just said, college basketball fans, he is from Philly, and he was born into college basketball. Matthew, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Matt. I might as well get started with the hometown guys for us. Buckeyes have had a little bit of a rough go of it this season. What's your thoughts on Ohio State basketball at this point, and you know, Fad Mata has been here a while. Is there someone out there, is it time to maybe move on from Fad and re-energize this program?
Well, when you look at the Buckeyes this year, you have to look at the fact they've had a couple of massive front court blows with that injury to Kata Bates-Diop and the understandable decision for a developmental redshirt season there with Derek Funderburk. But without Bates-Diop, they went out and beat Michigan State. They went out and beat Minnesota. They beat Michigan. So there is some good things you can look at from this season that really had some big blows to it. And then Trevor Thompson, with what he's done with double-doubles and rim protection, he looks like next year as a senior, he could easily be on one of those all-Big Ten teams. He's come a long way since getting there in Columbus. But with Fad Mata, I think he deserves to keep his job. I think this team has overachieved this year relative to those personnel hits that they've taken. And then next year, I think they're going to have a big year. Caleb Wesson's going to be coming in to join his older brother Andre there. Mark Loving is the only senior, so there's not going to be a lot of turnover. And the guys that have transferred away recently, they've had problems with other schools, too. It's Austin Grandstaff. He had problems with Oklahoma when he left Ohio State. And then Mickey Mitchell had problems with Santa Barbara when he left Ohio State. So maybe it was not as much of a problem with Fred Meyer and his staff. But I think that relative to all the things they've had to deal with this season, Ohio State should definitely be keeping Fred Meyer going forward.
Well, there you go. The voice of reason, maybe.
So happy to be joined by Matthew Trebold, Matt Trebold. Matt, real quick for people who are going to be listening to this, national analyst for City of Basketball Love, but drop the Twitter handles and stuff like that so people can get to your great information and almost, you know, kind of follow along, or if you point to something that you might talk about, you know, on your site or things that you mention, you know, just give them that follow information real quick, please.
So to follow me on Twitter, I'm at TrapsMatt, which is T-R-A-B-S and Matt, M-A-T-T. And then, yeah, with City of Basketball Love there, I have a weekly column called The Traps Files. And that's one of the many things we, over there at City of Basketball Love, really pride ourselves in and do a good job with.
We think Matt is one of the foremost college basketball analysts and basketball analysts in general. So he's just a great follow. And you're going to get, you know, deep insight, not the Seth Greenberg, North Carolina's going to win it all type of analysis. You're going to actually get some real breakdown. So we thank you for the hard work you put in, Matt. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
What say you to the detractors of Fad Mata? We got some, you know, hardcore people, myself included, who feel like he is underachieved with if it's recruiting. If you think about the talent that's been leaving Ohio, whether it's Luke Kennard going to Duke, Issa Ahmad, or even
Nigel Hayes.
Think about Carlton Bragg, you know, down there in Kansas. That's what some of the folks, you know, have a problem with Fad Mata. Also, the development side. You talk about the bigs. There's another, you know, Garfield Heights product, Dave Bell, that's been on the roster for 2 years, and he just can't seem to get any minutes. But then we see Thad Mata starting Michael Potter, a freshman, over both Thompson and him. So those are some of the things that, you know, the hardcore Buckeye fans have a problem with, not seeing player development in those rotation decisions by Mata.
Well, I can understand, especially from the recruiting point, where some Buckeyes fans want him to get out of there because he doesn't have a big class coming in next year. Granted, he doesn't really need it as much. It's not a lot of turnover in terms of graduation. And you've had some of these big recruits go elsewhere. So Grant Stature, Mitchell, Daniel Giddens is now at Alabama. But I think, I mean, Micah Potter hasn't been great, that consistent, but he's had his moments. I think he's brought in some good, at least when you look at Trevor Thompson, some good pieces, and if you want to call it the transfer market in men's college basketball. But I just think he's just such a name. I think he's owned, or he deserves a little bit of a longer leash when it comes to if he's going to have a rough season or a rough couple of seasons in a row. I do understand the recruiting stuff, but I think he's had such a track record of success, both regular season and in the postseason, that I think you got to keep him for the time being.
Well, I want to give a quick shout out to the Ohio State women's team, who had the best performance in that building all season, Matt. They took down Maryland last night. So that's some of the problems that us Buckeye fans have. But you make key points, and maybe you walk some of us off the bridge from jumping in the Olentangy River.
Hey, whatever I can do.
One last quick follow-up on the Thad Mata stuff. Do you think that the looming hire of Archie Miller somewhere else besides Ohio State, would that at all, you think, accelerate possibly his demise?
There is that aspect of the Thad Mata relationship throughout the years now with Archie Miller, and the fact that if Thad Mata was going to be let go, it might be him. If Archie Miller doesn't end up at North Carolina State, that looming over the whole situation. But unless he has a lot of success at that next place he goes, and Thad Mata and Ohio State continue to not have success, which I'd be very surprised. I think next year could be one that gets them back into this national conversation. Then that's a situation where you would have a lot of people wondering why a move wasn't made to get Archie Miller maybe this year, with letting Thad Mata go after a bad season and then grabbing him before he went to North Carolina State. But I don't really see that happening in terms of both of those parts of the scenario. So you have Archie doing well at the next spot if he leaves Dayton, and then a bad season again for Ohio State. I just don't see them having another bad season.
That's encouraging.
Yeah, Archie Miller always said it was a dream job to return to Ohio State. So that's the only thing. That's why we had that in there, Matt. We're a little shaky that, you know, with Gottfried leaving NC State. Who's some of the other coaching names that, you know, might be possible replacements for the Wolfpack? Or if Archie Miller takes that job, possible replacements for Thad Mata if he doesn't get the reprieve that you're pushing for here?
Well, I got to look at the fact that Kevin Keats at UNC Wilmington, he deserves at some point here to get that next level of job, a power conference job, because he's been so good recently. UNC Wilmington is, again, one of the top mid-majors. Another guy that I would not be surprised to see what he does in this coaching search when you look at power conference openings over the next few months here, once the offseason hits. It's got to be Lavelle Moten from North Carolina Central. Very sharply dressed, but I think what he has his kids doing on the court of late, of the last half decade of seasons, is even more sharp there. This is a guy, North Carolina Central, he's led them to have wins in the 20s in their record for the last, in four of the last five seasons. So this is a guy that's another big-time mid-major coaching name right now that I think deserves a big-time job here soon.
All right, Matt, let's hit the hardwood. It's not the City Six, but it's our rivalry here. We talk about the Crosstown Shootout, and it definitely delivered this year. We're going to get to the excitement that everybody has about the Bearcats in the next question. But with this one, the Xavier Musketeers, they've kind of dropped a couple games here. We saw Trayvon Blewett go crazy in that game with one of the performances, I think, of the year in college basketball. But without Sumpner now, who's out with the injury for the rest of the year, can the Musketeers, you know, pull it together, make some noise maybe in the Big East tournament, and solidify a better seed in the projected March Madness?
I'm unfortunately pretty skeptical about how far they can get in March without him, because they're 3-3 since he got shut down, three-game losing streak, last two were to unranked opponents, including by 22 points, to a good Marquette team, but if they're not ranked, they're not going to be too high of a seed if they do get on the right side of the bubble on Selection Sunday 2017. And unfortunately, the player that was arguably most suited to step in for him in Miles Davis parted ways with the program after just three games. So Quentin Gooden, he's been getting a lot more minutes recently. His role is exponentially bigger. So a lot is on his shoulders as such a young player. But something that is good at this time for the Musketeers is they were looking for a while for a reliable big man. And I think right now they have that Norfolk State transfer, Rasheed Gaston, because he was good at times, but not very consistent earlier on in the season. But he's come with three double-doubles in a row recently. And there's a lot of question marks with Trayvon Blewett. Right now he's day-to-day with that ankle injury. And while he's been good for most of the games, obviously he's really good in that Cincinnati game that you just talked about a second ago, sometimes he lacks consistency. And when he does, it's really rough. So you had the last game he was actually able to play in against Villanova a few games ago for the team went scoreless. And a handful of games before he went for that 40-point game against Cincinnati, he went for 1 point against Georgetown. Georgetown was definitely not the team they are now back then at the start of Big East play. So it's a matter of just having Gaston keep chugging away, then having Blewett come back strong, and have consistency here at the end of the season if they want to do something in March.
Now let's talk a little bit about the crosstown rival, Bearcats. You know, they're notorious for letting you down in March. What do you think of their chances of making a little bit of noise this year?
Well, when you look at recent NCAA tournaments, they've showed you that you need good point guard play. And that's whether or not you have like two starting point guard types like Villanova did last year with Jalen Brunson and Ryan Arcidiacono, or if you just really need it's a good veteran leader at the point in general. And I think that's what they have with Troy Copain. And while he doesn't have the same kind of scoring numbers that he's had in a couple recent seasons, I think he's a better point guard now. Right now he's third nationally in assist-to-turnover ratio, which is such a big deal when you get to the end of the season. And they're, yet again, very, very deep. So I don't know if you want to kind of change things up and have Justin Jennifer be that kind of Jalen Brunson to the Ryan Arcidiacono type, the Batman, and he could be the Robin that you saw with Villanova last year, and the Batman being Troy Copain. And Jaron Cumberland, he plays beyond his years. Gary Clark and North Carolina State transfer he's talking about, North Carolina State. Kyle Washington, they get banged in the blocks for the best of them. Yeah, a big thing is going to be that AAC tournament. It was wild last year with Tulane, with UConn and Jalen Adams in that shot against Cincinnati, with Memphis making the AAC tournament final. So I think it could be again, but if they get through it without too much of a downturn. So as long as they don't go out early in that, in their first game maybe, I think they should have the confidence to be very good in terms of marks because of all that depth and that senior leadership.
Yeah, and they also got the Philly product, Nasir Brooks, and of course their coach, Mick Cronin, a LaSalle grad, and congrats to Mick Cronin, his 300 wins. You know, Matt, Bearcat Nation is going crazy. They finally feel like they're getting a little bit of respect, getting up to number 15 in the AP poll. They're just hoping that the Bearcats, Cincinnati, can be Cinderella when it comes to March.
Mick Cronin is the guy for the job. He's the guy who knows what to do at the end of the season, and they deserve to have this. They only had a few losses this year, and they're against ranked foes. They deserve to be top 15 in price. They're not a little bit higher. I think that's part of the reason is you have an AAC this season that is underachieving to a certain degree. A lot of that's because of injuries, and you have all those at Connecticut. So I think that hurts AAC in general when you look at it. But I think they're probably even better, maybe a top 12 at the very least than a top 15 team. But they definitely deserve that top 15 billing that they have now. Mick Cronin's been there before. He knows how to win games in March, regardless if he got super far down the road. But I think this is his best team in a while. When you look at all the senior leadership, all the new faces that are playing very well in Cumberland and Washington, and that depth, they have the depth again, and that definitely is going to help them.
Let's go up north and get to the Maction, which I know you follow too, Matt. Akron, they lost a heartbreaker, and that home winning streak ended at 30 to Kent State. But they have been real hot. Their five losses, you know, have some of the who's who of college basketball in there. I mean, the Bobcats are in there from OU, but Creighton and Gonzaga are the other two teams. And I think if there's ever a quality loss looking at it, that would be one. Keith Danbrot also with 300 wins, so shout out to him. But can Quan Cheatham and Isaiah Big Dog Johnson to finish MAC tournament champions to get into the tournament, or are they already a lot?
The Akron's going to need to win the MAC tournament to get to the field of 68. They have undoubtedly been the MAC's best team this year, even with that loss you just talked about to Kent State last time out. But the issue is going to be possibly that the MAC, again, is very deep. So skating through the MAC tournament, it's not a gimme. And after the last 2 years that the MAC tournament has seen and the title going to Buffalo, I think that that title is Buffalo's to lose at this point. And unfortunately for everybody else in the MAC, they have turned around their season with this current 6-game winning streak. And for a team that does so well in the MAC tournament of late, that is very, very scary, if you ask me, for everybody else. But they have some great pieces, like they always do. They always have some of the biggest names, regardless of how far they get in the MAC tournament. Akron does in that conference. But you just mentioned Big Dog, Isaiah Johnson. He's had some big-time highlight reel plays this year when it comes to the nation as a whole. He's a load to deal with down low. Keaton has been a big-time inside-outside threat for 3 years now. Antonio Jackson's gone from a breakout candidate to now a player that Dan Brott and the staff can lean on. So they will definitely be the top dog going in and the favorite going in, but there'll be a lot of teams, including a red-hot Buffalo team right now, that can knock them off. It would really be too bad because they deserve to be the Field of 68 representatives from the MAC.
Matt, let's talk a little bit about a team that we don't talk a whole lot about when it comes to March Madness, and that's the Northwestern Wildcats. Kind of a Cinderella-type season for them at some level. My question, I guess, is this team legit? And if it gets into the Field of 68, can it, you know, win a game, win their first ever game after getting in for the first ever time?
I think they can. I think they are legit. They have two go-to scorers when you look at Vic Law, Scotty Lindsey, who's now back healthy, played in their last game against Rutgers. Ryan McIntosh is truly one of the best pure point guards in the game right now. Derek Part has become very reliable on the glass and protecting the rim. Freshman Isaiah Brown there in that backcourt, he was able to have some big outings and get his production up, get his confidence up when Lindsey was sitting out recently. And yes, it sounds like a cliche, but they have a couple guys on Sam J. Lumpkin, Gavin Skelly, that do all the little things. Nathan Taphorn come off the bench to be a very good perimeter role player. So I think they have all the pieces that you look for being able to not only get to the dance and survive the bubble conversation, but also maybe win a game when you get there too.
Ladies and gentlemen, Matt Trable knows his stuff, if you can't tell. Now we're going to get to the meat of this conversation, Matt. We want to know how you felt about the early release of the NCAA selection committee, first 16 in, and then also, too, you know what we really want, Matt. We want to know some of these teams, if it's Monmouth or possibly getting in for the first time, another first-timer, Wichita State, St. Mary's, who's some of those teams, you know, flying under the radar that can make some noise and march from that bottom part of the bracket?
As far as the committee releasing those top 16 teams early, personally, I wasn't a big fan of it because college basketball has a lot more turnover than football, where they've been doing something similar to that with the FC people for a few years now. So doing it that early, I don't know if it seemed like the best move, because there's going to be so much turnover. There's going to be so many differences in seeding if you were able to do it like an every week basis. I would have rather seen them release it with some legitimate contention teams for at large bids and closer to the cut line there, because those top 16 teams aren't something ridiculous, are still going to get in. Yes, the seed at the top of the spectrum there might be different from 1-4 or 1-6, whatever it ends up being. So they're at least going to make it. I want to see some teams closer to the top line in the bubble conversation that were told at that point in the year whether or not they would be in if the season ended that day. For a couple dark horse teams, though, you mentioned a couple different ones there with Monmouth and the Wichita State this year, who wasn't expected to be as good after they lost a lot of Vegas and Knicks and Fred Van Vliet to the Raptors, but they're back up. But if I'm going to go with just a couple, I got to go with Texas at Arlington. So if they survive another really good Sun Belt conference, they have shown that they can upset some blue blood. This year, Texas, then they beat St. Mary's when they were number 12 in the season, or number 12 in the polls at that point in the season. And then last year, they beat Ohio State, they beat Memphis, they beat UTEP. So now you have Kevin Hervey, who got hurt last year after some of those big wins. He's now healthy. He's back being one of the top double-double threats in the nation. Eric Neal, their point guard, one of the top assist men in the country. And they have another guard that's more pass-first and Drew Charles, who's been very smooth in conference play. So that's one, the Mavericks there in Arlington. And then another one is UC Irvine out of the Big West. The English point guard Luke Nelson, he's back after missing 18 games earlier in the year. He's been magnificent in the four games. after returning to action. This is a guy who's been relevant in the mid-major ranks for a long time now, and they actually have him consistently healthy for the first time all season long. And Jaron Martin, who's now their second option, was their top option when Luke Nelson was sidelined. And he really gained a lot of good experience and became this big-time player. And when Luke Nelson's come back, he has not fallen off whatsoever. And then you have 7'2 Greek Giannis Dimitropoulos. He's not the inside presence that 7'6 Mamadou Ndiaye was for the last few years there for the Anteaters, but able to show versatility, which is not really something that Ndiaye had. So he gets it done down low. So still to a certain degree, and he's hit 23s this year. And really quick, another one, if they get out of the Northeast Conference, LIU Brooklyn there with Jason Augusto and Mirazana. So there's a few there that I think, if they get through the conference tournament, can win a game in March.
I love the fact that you got the Anteaters in there. That's one of the best nicknames in all of college basketball, for sure.
Absolutely.
Hey, just, you've watched a lot of this. What conferences to you look like the battle-tested conferences that are going to do the most damage in March Madness?
Well, when you look at the last few years coming to this one, top to bottom, you looked at the Big 12, which is probably the best in terms of conference API, if you look back at those numbers. And then the Big 10 in terms of having so many teams that were at least in the conversation to be in the field of 68. This year, it's tough because while maybe the very, very bottom isn't as good when you look at a Boston College saw and so forth, the ACC looks to be maybe the best conference a season after conference realignment a few years back. Maybe the best conference that college basketball fans have seen since that time. And that's a big deal because, like I'm just saying, the Big 12 and the Big 10 have had some really, really good years depth-wise, not just guys that can be top seeds, but also top to bottom when you look at it like that. But ACC, and they have a lot of teams, what's helping them is that they're deeper than they were expected to be, and they were expected to be pretty deep when stuff started out. Georgia Tech has been unbelievable, taking down ranked opponent after ranked opponent in ACC play. Wake Forest, while they can't seem to get over the hump against Duke, a couple recent games against the Blue Devils, that's another team that is going above and beyond what they're expected to do this year. So I think the best conference right now, the most battle-tested, has to be the ACC going into March.
One of your season previews, Matt, you had possibly the ACC breaking that record. Do you still think they get 11 teams in? I think right now they're projected at 9.
I think it's definitely a possibility. The problem, though, which is going to keep them maybe at a 9, at a 10, rather than at 11, fact that they have so many bubble teams right now, and they're kind of beating up on each other. You had Clemson losing to Syracuse recently, and then Syracuse turning around and losing the Georgia Tech. So that is what might keep them away from any kind of record like that, because these bubble teams keep taking each other out of contention. It's something you've seen a lot with the Pac-12 recently, where teams that are viable teams in terms of March and making the NCAA tournament are taking each other out of the equation. So I think it's probably, at this point, with some of these results recently with those kind of teams, bubble-wise, it's probably more like a 9 or a 10 rather than an 11.
On Creighton, can the Blue Jays, with losing, you know, Mo Watson and that injury, can that point guard by committee work, you know, a freshman, then a junior and a senior, if it's Zirudin and Mintz and Marcus Foster, who dropped that 35 on Georgetown, can they actually, you know, still push through the Big East and then make some noise in the tournament?
I really hope they do, because that's a great story this year. I like so many of their pieces in terms of they're pretty new pieces that McDermott has there, and he's made them so cohesive so quickly when you look at Huff and Watson coming in recently, and then when you look at Justin Patton, who might be the top big man, true big man taken in this upcoming, what would be the 2017 NBA draft. I don't know. Dana and Mintz, one of the first games after you saw Watson get hurt for the season, he was very good, went for double digits, but then kind of flipped it away after that. And Isaiah Zirudin, somebody who, because of all the reps he's had, he's been a player in that rotation for a long time now, but he's not really a true point guard. So he has the confidence, but maybe not the skill set to be a good part of that point guard by committee. They're going to have plenty of opportunities because they have the talent there with Kyrie Thomas and with Marcus Foster coming over from Kansas State. And they had some great big men down low, Justin Patton. Is unbelievable. Still a little skinny, but he's so versatile in terms of being able to do a lot of his work in transition And speaking of versatility, Huff, Cole Huff there is a very good inside-outside threat. So they have the pieces. I'm not sure if they're going to have the glue to keep them together in a Mo Watson. And unfortunately with Mo Watson, because he was so good at the point and keeping everything on a string and keeping everything glued together, that I'm not sure that they are able to rebound after losing him, even though they still have all that talent.
Give us the scouting report. Can Jim Boeheim turn water into wine one more time and can Syracuse, as the projected 12 seed right now, get back to the Final Four?
I don't see it. And the thing is, like last year, I didn't really like their roster that much, and they made such a crazy run. But right now, they're just having some issues. And a lot of it, unfortunately, is happening with a couple of veterans in those grad transfers in John Gill and Andrew White. Andrew White's still putting up double-digit points all over the place, but he's taking so many threes. And I think it's really hurting that team because that's why he's getting the points, and that obviously helps their total score for a given game. It's hurting them in terms of efficiency, and it really takes the wind out of their sails at plenty of times. And then while John Gillen keeps hitting big shots, he's on this, kind of the flip side of Andrew White. He's putting up 6 points all over the place. His stat lines have been pretty putrid over the last couple weeks. So it's just a matter of making that rotation work. And Jim Boeheim likes keeping a tight rotation, and that's what I didn't think he should have done this year with all their talent, but it's what got them back in the swing of things. That's what got them back on that winning streak in the ACC. But it's just a matter of seeing whether or not at a given point down the stretch here, whether they go tight rotation or whether they go with a bigger one, having Franklin Howard in there. I'd be very surprised because something so unlikely to happen 2 years in a row would be a big deal. They have to just worry right now about getting in the tournament.
All right, Matt, we thank you for your time, and we thank you for the analysis. Please let people know where they can get more of your breakdowns and your thoughts about this college basketball season and upcoming tournament action, and any shout-outs that you might have or anything else you want to plug, buddy.
Well, my column is the Cravs Files, like I was talking about earlier, T-R-A-B-S Files. That's there on cityofbasketballlove.com, spelled all like that in the URL there. And then on Twitter, where I just want to keep it as tasty as possible, it's at Travis Madigan, T-R-A-B-S-M-A-T-T.
Take care, Matt. Thanks. Appreciate you taking your time out of your day.
Cannot thank you enough. I mean, Matt, I've said it before, but I really think you're on your way as an analyst. We're humbled that you would join us and break down some of this great college basketball action this season. And I think you're going to be, you know, if Joey Brackett's, God forbid, has a heart attack or something, they're going to be tapping you on the shoulder, brother. So Godspeed and keep up the good work, man.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me on.